IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Playing Catch Up Podcast. I'm Alyssa Cometti, and I'm here with Rachel DiCecco and Hallie Griggs. Recapping the first weekend of the 2022 season. How are you guys doing post weekend one and post Super Bowl?
It was an amazing weekend. I think that, looking ahead to what you would hope opening weekend would bring us in terms of, you know, what we saw in the women's and men's action. We saw some key upsets in both the men's and women's game. It was really kind of all you could have asked for, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was fun. Who did you have winning the Super Bowl, Hallie? Did you care? I didn't care. So no judgment.
I mean, it wasn't a bit. Was I passionate about it? No. But did I wear my high school colors of black and orange just because that's who I was rooting for? Absolutely. Good thing I had to black and orange to don. No, I just think that, you know, Joe Burrow's story and how strong he started his career coming back from a season ending injury as a rookie to, you know, in his sophomore season, lead a team to the Super Bowl. I mean, who wouldn't want to get behind that? Plus, I feel like in a way, like LA, they're kind of like the Monstars in Space Jam. Like there's just, like, there are these super teams, you know, Tampa Bay was that last year. There are these super teams in the NFL that it always feels good to root for the underdog, right?
Yeah, I can agree. But I also am like, I think it's really cute that Matt Stafford has like four daughters, and it's just there. They have a cute little family. So I'm excited for him. I literally didn't follow anything all season long. So I have nothing really good to add besides that Matt Stafford has four daughters.
I mean, Hallie, how did that? I know your high school colors were orange and black.
Yeah. I'm surprised we haven't talked about this. Orange and black.
So strange that hasn't come up.
That's my takeaway from what you just said. That's all. I stopped listening when I was like, orange and black. I mean, yeah. let's be real for us, like late 30s, some of us early 40 somethings. The halftime show was the real star last night.
Best halftime show ever. So devastating. My daughter, who's, I'm like ashamed to say, was still awake during the halftime show, albeit it wasn't too late, but she was just having a fun time. So she's like sitting there, who that, mama? And I'm like, oh, that's Dr. Dre.
That's Snoop.
But who that, mama? That's Mary J. Blige. And then here repeats, Dr. Dre. I'm like, yeah, Dempsey. Well, listen to the tunes tomorrow. I just have to find some 2-year-old appropriate ones, of which she's were none.
Going to the doctor today, she's going to be so confused. So... She's like, Dr. Dre.
We did go to the doctor. Her doctor went, knock your heart today. Good thing she didn't call him Dr. Dre. That would be a lot of questions to answer.
I mean, they hit, the group chat was blown up because they hit not one, like, but two of our 2003 highlight tape songs, Mary J. and Eminem, and we were just dying. I mean, we were so fired up. What a good halftime show. I mean, normally I'm like, is this over yet? And I wanted more. Like, give me more all of it. So good.
It was kind of that type of, like, do you know when you watch something and it's so good and you can kind of tell it's coming to an end? You're like, oh, please don't end. Like, please just make this the longest halftime show ever. like, when Eminem came on, I was like, ooh, we probably only have, like, a minute left. Like, I wish that the Final Four, talk about, segue back to lacrosse, because I know Rachel's got a hard time. I wish Memorial Day weekend we had some halftime shows, that's for sure.
That is a interesting, Matt. Who would be the Final Four halftime performer?
Like, if you could pick anybody, who would you have? That's a great question.
Yeah.
If we could pick anybody, I don't know. But did you know, fun fact, the Chainsmokers, one of them went to Syracuse, so...
You know, I did feel like I remember hearing that when they were, you know, back when they were, I mean, I'm sure they're still relevant, but back when I was a someone who would listen to the Chainsmokers.
Got it. Well, maybe
the playlist has changed drastically in the last like 5, 6, 7 years.
They don't have any Kids Bop versions of their songs yet, Alyssa, is that what you're saying?
No, no. For Kenzie, Raffi, do you guys know Raffi? That would probably be her ideal halftime show. But that's, I mean, really what we'll...
Big Dre fan, so.
I wonder if he's available.
We need to get back on topic. People are going to stop.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Left turn, and not to bring the mood way down, but before we, you know, dive right into what's been going on this past weekend, I think it's important to first address the really alarming and upsetting incident that happened at the start of the weekend, which occurred when the Howard women's lacrosse team went to play Presbyterian this past Friday. Upon walking into the stadium, they were heckled by what we assume are college students, college boys sitting atop the hill next to the stadium, where they were being targeted with some really foul racist and sexist language. And we just want to first say that our hearts and support really go out to the Howard women's lacrosse team. You know, upon hearing this, and I'm sure you guys can relate, it's just like, how in the world do people talk this way, think this way? It's just so hard to see. And, you know, it's something that we'll never truly be able to understand, because, you know, we are female athletes, but we aren't female athletes of color. And I think that just acknowledging that in itself is like really important. And it's just, it's so upsetting, and our hearts really go out to them, and we want to support them and give them as much love as we possibly can. So first need to address that, of course.
100%. I think one of the most upsetting things is that, like, this has just been an ongoing thing, and it just keeps happening. And like, everyone's, you know, the university will say this is not reflective of our values, but like, there's like, there just feels like super light on consequence with the people actually acting like this. And it's just like, okay, until there's real consequences for either the school, the administration, the students involved, like, this is just going to keep happening. And I think about the Howard women's team showing up and having that happen to them, and what, like, how scared they must have been and upset and angry, and like, it just shouldn't be. And like, I hope that Presby College takes like strong action, not just a statement about how this does not align with their values, and they, you know, they will do whatever they're going to do. But like, there needs to be consequence here versus just like a statement of like thought or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think so many athletes that play this sport have the luxury of feeling safe and not even have to worry about feeling safe in a setting and in an athletic arena. And I think that's where my heart just goes out to this team and its coaching staff, to have to show up to a game and then have to hear what they were hearing and endure what they did, and then have to step on a field and perform. That's gut-wrenching to think about the emotions that, you know, were flowing through that team. And I think that, you know, I agree with everything you said. And the only thing I would add was, I do think that the greater lacrosse community, like the outpouring of support and the fact that it was being talked about so quickly, you know, I think that that's, we're in a great place, but we still have a lot more work to do. But I do, I mean, I think that just knowing that the community is kind of rallying around, and I do, it kind of like demanding answers from Presbyterian and not just a slap on the wrist. You know, I think if you have someone that's representing your student body, and not even your team or your organization, but your student body, there has to be repercussions with behavior like that. So I'm curious to see the actions that are taken. And yeah, I mean, just what you said, Alyssa, just them knowing that, you know, the community has their support as paramount.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it's such a bummer that that is the way truly that the season opened. And, you know, it's such an exciting time, and it's so exciting for the teams to finally get to play other competition. And just to, for that to be your first experience of the year is really, really, I can't imagine how hard it is. And so we surely hope that, you know, Howard can look forward to brighter days and know that we're all rallying behind them and all Howard women's lacrosse fans, just hoping that they have a really positive experience for the rest of the year. So yeah, that's unfortunately the way that we have to start the podcast, but do want to, you know, start moving towards a lighter note and kind of talking about the games that went on, especially the, you know, really key games that we did watch. Starting out, first quick shout out to head coaches, new head coaches, Emily Bosnall and Kim Hillier getting their first wins of the year. Pitt winning their first inaugural win against Duquesne in overtime fashion, and Kim Hillier winning against Drexel. Just big shout out to them. Additionally, we want to go to Stanford and Syracuse. I'm so excited to talk to you guys about this and, you know, get your thoughts on this game. First, I would, even though they didn't come out victorious, I do want to talk about Stanford because I was so impressed with them. Hallie, you know a lot about some of these players at Stanford, so I'm really curious to see your thoughts on how you thought it went for them.
Yeah, I mean, to look at what Stanford did, and I know we'll talk about it later on the pod about their, you know, their game against Albany, but for Stanford to go into the Carrier Dome, which is not an easy place to play, a team, you know, certainly experienced in who they return as veterans, but a wholly inexperienced starting lineup. I mean, you look at that stat sheet, over three quarters of its offense was produced by freshmen, redshirt freshmen, and key sophomores. You know, I think for my biggest thing was for them to go into the Dome the way they did, come firing out and really like beat up on Syracuse the first half of the game. That was pretty special to see them come out with that kind of fight and, you know, punch out of the gate. I think Ashley Humphrey is just such a talent. I've had the opportunity to watch her here locally in Connecticut, and I do. I mean, I'll say it now and might be bold. She's a freshman. She's one of the best feeders in the nation. It doesn't matter whatever class you're in. You know, for her to go in, and I think Syracuse made key adjustments, which put a lot of pressure on her, and that's why Syracuse is able to come back in this game. But it's, you know, she made her presence known. She followed it up with a 4-goal, 7-assist outing at Albany yesterday. But to be a freshman, to be such a key piece of what a defense is trying to do and limit your touches, I think it goes to show if you give her time and room, she'll pick your defense apart, and it doesn't matter how good you are, who you have lining up. And she also has some key targets, you know, Sarah Jakes, gosh, Annabelle Frist, you know, for, again, a freshman to have 6 goals yesterday. Ailish Kelly, she's such a grinder in the midfield. She's a talent offensively. They just have so much firepower in their youth, which is really exciting, I think, to see. And then I think Syracuse, I was really impressed, and we can flip the switch. I'm interested to see, you know, obviously we all know I'm obsessed with Megan Tyrell. I don't think she gets talked about nearly enough. I talk about her. We talk about her, but I just don't think she gets credit for how good she is on that team. But to see Syracuse kind of stay the course, play through a game plan that wasn't being executed accordingly, but they played like a mature team, that, you know, there were multiple aspects of the game that weren't going their way, but they still found a way to grind it out. And that's kind of, you know, that's key in a team that's trying to find its identity defensively and trying to figure out who they are offensively, with several players coming back from injury and certain players trying to insert themselves in an offense.
Yeah, I totally agree on everything, I guess. Rachel, who would you say, you know, talking about the Syracuse defense, they obviously graduated a lot last year with Ella Simpkins and Carrie DeFleece and Asa Goldstock. There were some new faces out there alongside Sarah Cooper, who is obviously just super talented. I saw she's returning on the Twarton watch list for the fourth time in her career, which is just insane. Was there anyone, Rachel, to you that stuck out specifically on Syracuse or Stanford defensively?
This was one of the games I said I need an assistant to drive my kids around because.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I was texting you guys during this game as I was at Costco and dropping off kids at parties. Like, guys, I'm going to need assistance this spring if I'm going to be helpful. Plenty of highlights to watch. I think, like, for me, when I look at, I mean, how you touched on with the game plan, like, that's just discipline with the first game, first year head coach, like, to not panic, I think just speaks to the trust they have in Kayla. And then obviously, like, filling, like, Goldstock's shoes, that seems like it's still up in the air, and that's going to have a huge impact. We'll get to that later on the Michigan Notre Dame front, but I think, like, getting set in cage for them is going to be huge. With, you know, Sarah Cooper's a grizzled veteran, but there's a lot of new faces there. So I think figuring that out sooner than later is going to be really important for the Orange women.
That was insane. I mean,
that's what I was just about to say.
I think, Rachel, once you get the replay and as you continue to watch Syracuse and cover some of their games this year in person, like, she's like Sarah Cooper in the making, and as an alum, couldn't be happier about it. Like, she was just an absolute beast, causing turnovers, diving for loose balls out of bounds. Like, when you look at a defense that did, I mean, Ella Simpkins, again, talk about players that just didn't get the credit they were due. I thought Carrie DeFleece was kind of their steady Eddie, and Ella Simpkins just had an absolute monster super senior year last year. Those are big shoes to fill, and it's kind of nice to see Katie Goodell kind of stepping in them. And then in the goalkeeping front, it's interesting. Like, I think Kimberhauer is an absolute beast. Like, she's just, I mean, she might have been the second best goalie in the year last year. She just played behind Taylor Moreno. And she stepped in there in the second half and was just, like, making saves she had no business making. But I will say, Delaney Switzer in the first half, she was playing, like, the defense in front of her wasn't pressuring out and putting as much pressure on Ashley Humphrey and on some of their outside players to kind of force those passes inside. So I think the way that defense played had a big impact on the angles that Kimberhauer was seeing. But honestly, in this game, I thought the goalie, Kara Ram, was the most impressive goalie on the field. I think, you know, I didn't talk about her. That's kind of why I wanted to circle back here. I mean, she, Stanford, nobody really knew. Nobody kind of, like, they also have a huge question mark in terms of who their starting goalie is. And for her to come out against that offense and take points off the board was really impressive. And that's where I think Stanford was able to get most of its momentum.
I totally agree. I was just about to say, and we must be on the same wavelength today or something, but yeah, she was so impressive. And I was, you know, obviously not going to miss Kayla Traynor's first game. So I was in the dome watching it in person, and it was just insane. Like, you just, opportunities that you would think are just sure goals, and these are elite level shooters. And she just was, like you said, taking points off the board. And when Syracuse was going on runs, she was stopping them herself and kept Stanford in it for a long time. And, you know, once they put their youth pieces all together, you know, I am convinced that they are, you know, top 5-6 level team. Like, I think that is for sure on the radar for them. But talking about, you know, elite level teams and top 5 programs, fast forward a day to Northwestern BC, which I have to be honest, like, I thought it was going to be closer, but BC is just so good, like, across the board. It was like they looked like they were a team in May, except it was the first weekend of lacrosse in February. What did you guys think about that game?
Mid-season form for BC. Yeah, I mean, and it was like, I mean, the defense, it was a defense for me. I mean, Charlotte North did what, it felt like she was having a quiet day, and then you're like, wait, she actually had 8 points. So just, yeah, that was insane, yeah, in itself. But Schleicher, Sydney Scales, loved the way she was playing so, so hard. And I think the question mark for, and Rachel Hall had a great, absolutely great day. I think the question for the BC we talked about is, like, Kara Urbank was huge for Charlotte's success last year, you know, feeding her all those passes. How's that going to work? I mean, Charlotte said to herself, like, you know, she can be a one woman show, but that's not what's going to be best for Charlotte or the team. Like, how do you work within the unit when you have somebody that talented? And Mossman, I think she had 3 assists. Like, she just, it just, like, they just, like, adjusted perfectly, and it felt like they didn't miss a beat. So I also think Northwestern, you know, in fairness to them, you know, first game without Izzy Skein, like, and they start with the defending national champs. That's, you know, I think a tough transition. So, I, you know, with Kelly and Scott, I think it'll take a couple games to sort of shift and have different folks step up. But, you know, I don't think, I still think Northwestern is like top 10 easily, maybe top five. So it wasn't as close as I think maybe we would have thought, but I would give them a week or two and make those adjustments. And I think they'll surprise everybody.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, no, I think honestly for Northwestern, I think the biggest thing for them is like, we talked a lot about her last year. Like we were all on the skiing train, but I don't think we realized how like full steam ahead that train was until you see this team without her. Like you look at the lanes and the openings that she would create just by being on the field and having the ball in her stick. I think that's what this team is missing. Like it was the minute Skein got an inch, you sent a double, you sent a triple, you did anything to stop her, to try to force her to, you know, duck out and move the ball. And they, whereas Lauren Gilbert is a very dynamic player, it's really hard to replace Izzy Skein just in terms of physically who she is. You know, she's a dominating physical force on the field. And you look at some of like the shot percentages. Like I do feel like Northwestern can take solace in the fact that they had great looks at goal. I think Rachel came up with some incredible saves in net for Boston College. But I think that's where they'll go. You know, Lauren Gilbert 1 for 5 from the field, Erin Coikendell 1 for 4. Those are statistics that we usually don't see for players like that. Like they're very efficient. And that's when you talk about Boston College being in midseason form. I think Northwestern just kind of looked like they were in preseason form a little bit. So I do think that that was like when Northwestern had the ball, I think they were trying to figure out who they were. But I will say Boston College, and I made this point, I wanted to bring it up. I packed it in the back of my mind to talk about it on this podcast. As I feel like, and I know we've talked about this, and I feel like we see a lot of flopping in women's lacrosse and in lacrosse in general. You know, lacrosse, I feel like it's coming a little bit more like soccer. It's being talked about at the rules level. How do you, you know, not let these calls just like play a game? And Charlotte North, what I will say about her, first of all, 7 goals, shooting 64% from the field. She draws more attention than any player in the country from a defense. She is so, you never see her on the ground. Like here's a player that draws more contact and draws more physical play than most players in the nation simply because who she is and what she's done. I've never seen her flop in my life. And I was talking to her high school coach and I was like, that might be like my favorite part about her. Like she is just so good and so unselfish, and I feel like she's just has a big smile on her face. Love the way she celebrates, but God, I've never seen her flop, and it's so refreshing. Like she's a kid that she just does the work. She takes the physicality. She works through a defense. She moves the ball when she has to. You never really see her force it. But yeah, like it's like she goes through 4 or 5 defenders on the way to the goal sometimes, and it's unbelievable how the ball stays in her stick. Yet she's never on the ground. And I feel like that's like, again, I feel like for so many times we've talked about, if you want to learn how to do this, watch Charlotte North. If you want to learn how to do this, like, I think the only thing I don't want my high school players doing is looking at her and thinking they can rip 8 meters from where she can, because that's something that not many people can do. And that's not a lesson I want out there. But like, I just love the fact that she is just not, the minute she gets a little bump, she's on the floor and she's flying out. And, you know, some player, it's a physical game. Some players get absolutely demolished. But I feel like we're seeing a lot of flopping. And I just wanted to call out the fact that she never flops. And I love it. End of story. I'm so
here, here to that. And like, I'm going to give secondary kudos to Acacia Walker-Weinstein for not encouraging that. When I see flopping on a team, I really believe it has to like a decent amount to do with coaching. And who's encouraging that in practice, how you're setting up your full speed drills, how you're calling things in practice, because there's definitely teams that do it more than others. And BC is not one of those. Charlotte certainly would have every right to drop to the ground every time and get a call, most likely. And she doesn't, like you said. So, you know, like, shout out to Acacia for like sort of the toughness and grit and knowing that like they're going to win other ways, not just by getting 8 meters, by throwing themselves on the turf. Because it is frustrating, and I do think as a defender, it's gonna you know, it's going to, it shouldn't change, those calls should not change the way defenders play. And I've watched games where defense just gets so timid because they know anytime they get near a player, she's going to hit the ground.
Right. And I think we talked about it last year too, of like, it's equally as frustrating with like, as a shooter, you know, grabbing your body as a defender and like trying to, you know, buy that, you know, dangerous follow through call. And it just is like, it takes away from the integrity of the game and on both sides. So, you know, hopefully we don't see that as much. And, you know, hopefully again, ultimately, if it comes down to it, maybe there will be a rule brought in where you get a warning for your team. And then that turns into, you know, a green card where you're down a minute or whatever, even a yellow card, because it does take away from the game. And we don't want it to turn into soccer where it's like, you know, you're being brought out on a stretcher and then running back into the game 2 seconds later, because it's just not fun that way. But moving on from the flops, the moral of the story, don't flop. But North Carolina and JMU had a battle, and North Carolina really ran away with it. And you know, I feel like JMU is a really solid team, and you know, we talk about Boston College a lot, almost kind of like we did last year with UNC. It was just like so amazing how talented Carolina was, but and now it's the same for Boston College. But I thought UNC looked really good, and it was fun to kind of watch Wurzburger step into this new role as Carolina's quarterback. And the announcers were talking about it. It's been written about how she's really assuming that role of Katie Hogue since she's graduated. But I thought she looked awesome, and it's nice to see her kind of step into this bigger role after being a freshman, and kind of, you know, she came on strong at the end of the year, but there were times early on in the season where you just could see that she was struggling to find where she fit into that really powerful Carolina offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for someone like Kaylin Wurzburger, she stepped into an impossibly tough lineup to really crack. She was recruited to be a quarterback, but Katie Hogue had an additional year. And how do you step in and try to figure out who you're going to be and what your role is? I think the way that she came on last year, she earned all tournament honors at the end of the year. She was able to figure it out, but that's a tough lineup to try to work your way through. And the fact that she did really speaks to how talented she is. You know, I think Jamie Ortega is the type of player that really needs to play with a quarterback. So Kaitlyn Wurzburger's offseason development is paramount for Jamie Ortega to be the scorer and the threat that she is. You know, I think that there are a couple of things. I love the way JMU always comes out and plays North Carolina hard. This game was a lot closer than the final score. Two things kind of struck me here as like North Carolina looked somewhat human in the first three quarters of this game. Jamie Ortega shot 20%, and that's just like, she's never done that before. You know, here's a player that shoots well above 50% and has for the larger part of her college career, upwards of 70% at times. You know, usually she is just a sharpshooter that doesn't miss. And Taylor Marino had 33% saves in this game. So, you know, she had four saves. And I think for any other team out there, like, JMU caught them at a perfect day, because I don't think either of those players have ever had an off day on the same day. So, you know, you look at Taylor Marino, what she's capable of. You look at Jamie Ortega, and she's just an absolute sharpshooter when the ball's in her stick. I don't think we're going to see that type of a performance out of either of them moving forward this season, let alone on the same day. They really are the leaders on both ends of the field. And I think that those are the types of games that when you're the opposing team, you're just like, oh, like fist pump. Yeah. thank God. But, you know, of course, you have to give it to players like Molly Doherty, who stood in her head. She had a 500 day in goal for JMU. And really, she's one of the best players in the country and has been for years. I think JMU's success starts with her on the defensive end, and it did when they won a national championship with her in goal. So the fact that they have her back was huge, and she gave North Carolina fits, especially early on. But I looked at that, and I think it was the perfect storm for a way in for JMU in that game.
Yeah, I would say UNC is going to be really interesting this year, because even though they didn't win the championship, I think there is a decent amount of pressure on them just because of the amount of star power they have on their roster. But they've got unfinished business from last season, and I'm really curious to see their development. I think they started off great last year, and then we kind of saw things sort of, they just like couldn't get the pieces right at the end of the season when it mattered. So I'm with that team experiencing sort of that upset loss to end their season. Maybe not an upset, I guess it depends how you look at it, but playing with that sort of pressure, but also that experience behind them, I think will put them in a good place if they channel it correctly. It's just, they have so many stars that have to fit in on the field, and that's going to, you know, it's a good problem to have, but it's a problem if it's not, you know, structured the right way, or they're not flowing the right way.
Yeah, I think I sat next to Marie McCool at the Syracuse game, and she was talking about just, you know, how much of a letdown. She was the volunteer coach for Carolina last year, and how disappointing it was for them to fall in the semis. But, you know, something she pointed out is the national championship that she won when she was there. She's like, we started the year out with like three losses or something like that, maybe two or three losses. I forget the exact amount, but she's like, you know, it allowed them to never be comfortable. And I think that's easy. That's why it's so hard to be undefeated champions, because it's so easy, even if you're aware of it, to still get complacent and get comfortable, and then, you know, get caught right at the end of the season by another team that's really hungry and hunting. So I think, who knows, it would be a great story for them to really switch the script and come back and win it. And obviously they have the talent to do that. But another game that kind of was an upset and new talent coming up was yesterday's Notre Dame-Michigan game, which I just first need to say, you know, let's not schedule a game during the Super Bowl next year, because this is a game that I feel like really got missed. And I just feel like, you know, for all the people who probably were tuned in to the Super Bowl, like millions of people across the country, missed an awesome game and, you know, and a huge upset and a program win for Michigan. And I think that was such a shame that it couldn't have been like, you know, next weekend or whatever, earlier in the day, because it was such a special game for them. So I just want to say that first, because it is crazy to me. But it's Michigan's first ever top five win. And speaking of goalies, Ariel Weissman had 13 saves, which was, you know, a key as they preserved the lead right at the end for against Notre Dame. And, you know, one of the biggest things that stuck out to me was how lopsided the ground balls were. Michigan had 20 to Notre Dame's 11, which, you know, we talk about it all the time. The gritty plays are just the most fun and, you know, underappreciated part of the sport. And that just like feels like that must be the Michigan mentality and really where they won the game, alongside of, you know, great defense and Caitlin needs four goals. But what are your guys' thoughts on that? I know you were watching Dr. Dre too, but did you catch any of that action?
I think for me, like, I, you know, when I was looking at that game and like kind of just reviewing they both had like pretty big wins over unranked teams earlier, and Michigan played four goalies in that game. And last year they split their goalies, and I was like, this is interesting. Like, what are they going to do here? Obviously it feels like Weissman came out on top. And like Notre Dame, you know, losing out, you know, Aldave, at the draw there, like just sort of as the one sort of controlling pace for them in possession, you know, they're going to need to figure out who can step up. You know, I think they're going to be anchored by Dean and their defense. But like, congrats to Hannah Nielsen. Like you said, first top five win. You know, Notre Dame is a good team, but I think for Michigan to really start off the season this way, not having played outside of the Big Ten and coming up with this big win early in the season is going to be huge for them confidence-wise down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Alyssa, you said it in the open. I mean, I do think that they are very veteran on offense, especially in their key playmakers and Mead, Muir, and Garvey. And I think, you know, really the difference, though, you look at this game and Arianne Weissman just stood on her head. Of the, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 players that recorded a point for Notre Dame, only two of them shot above, you know, 500 on the day from the field. So when you have players like, you know, Madison Ahern and Casey Choma, and, you know, even Jackie Wallach, Maddie Howe, I mean, they both, Wallach and Howe went 0 for 4 from the field. Weissman just, she, again, I feel like we saw some really solid goaltending, and I've said it a couple times, she stole points off the board. You know, she was making saves she had no business making, and when your goalie's doing that, and you have an attack that, you know, certainly they have some new pieces in the wheel. You look at players like Kaylee Dwyer and Julie Schwab getting into the mix as freshmen, underclassmen, but largely, this is a veteran team that knows how Coach Nielsen, knows how Coach Sear want their attack to be run. They're confident in what they can do on the offensive end. And when you have a player that's making 65% saves, they're just an absolute game changer. So it's interesting because I do think that this win after, I always say it's such an asterisk year for the Big Ten last year, but after such a disappointing year, you know, this was a team in the last NCAA tournament prior to 2021 that got in on an at-large bid for the first time in program history, to then have a down season the way they did last year and not go to the NCAA tournament. I feel like this is a win that gives Michigan so much confidence going into the rest of their season. Like, wow, we're back. We can do this. We can hang. I mean, Notre Dame is a team that was in the quarterfinals last year. But for Notre Dame, it's, you know, they travel to Vanderbilt on the road. That'll be a good game. And then you look at who they have next, Northwestern, Syracuse, Virginia. It's a tough stretch. So I think this is a team that, yes, they lost veterans in Aldave and Buchanan, and but they need to circle back quick because the stretch ahead is not easy.
I was thinking the same, and even just thinking about, you know, obviously it's a different level of conference, but like Vanderbilt is a very solid team, and like, you know, not like the ACC where every game you're going in is like a bloodbath and like you just don't, it's just never gives up. But you know, Vanderbilt is going to be a challenge for them, and if they don't come, they could be going into that play, that tough slate of games, 0-2. So I think it's something that they're really going to have to figure out and kind of get that chemistry, because you need your key players like Howe, Wolak, Choma, and Ahern to really be producing for you on offense to go far in the ACC. But yeah, it's great. It was a really exciting first weekend, and this week we have some really key games, and it will be exciting. I'm looking forward to watching the Drexel Penn State game. That's going to be Hillier's first real test, and then Penn State's opener as well. I'm really enjoying watching the Big Ten play other teams and get kind of have a better understanding of where everyone falls. But alongside that, Rachel, why don't you tell us, you don't have any updates. False alarm.
False alarm. No updates on Unleash Overnight this week, but hopefully, actually, I will be in Costa Rica our next recording session, so you guys will have to... Let's get to run as a duo instead of a trio next episode.
What?
Costa Rica? The PLL is bringing you to Costa Rica?
Nope.
I'm just kidding.
I'm bringing myself to Costa Rica. But if PLL wants to send me to Costa Rica, I'm happy to run a clinic there. No, taking a little vacation.
We got the PLL invitation, but we didn't get the Costa Rica invitation.
If the PLL wants to send me to the Costa Rica, I will also accept that vacation.
Yeah, I'm down. no updates yet. I'm working on some cool partnerships on the Unleashed side, so we'll share those. But I mean, I can't believe it's just week one. Like there are so many good games and so much more to come. We're gonna have a fun season.
Yeah, it's gonna be awesome.
Rach, quick before you have to hop, who's your game of the weekend?
Oh, I mean, I think I'm really interested to see Hopkins play this season. I love Loyola's coaching staff. I always love the culture of that team. So, that game, and then like the classic Virginia Maryland. I mean, who doesn't love that? So, I mean, those two are my games of the week. But there's so, I mean, you laid this out earlier, so there's just so many early good matchups that I think are going to help define the path for these teams. So we'll see.
I totally agree. I'm looking forward to Virginia Maryland for sure. Well, Rachel, you have to hop off, but yes. Hallie, why don't you tell us your very unbiased game of the weekend?
I couldn't be more excited for Syracuse Stony Brook, and it's not just because I'm a Syracuse homer. I think that this is going to be a really good test for Syracuse. Stony Brook is a team that's very well coached, I think plays really scrappy and plays up to any competition you throw in its way. So to have a battle and a test this early in the dome will be very important for a senior heavy Syracuse team, but I also think really important for kind of a relatively young Stony Brook team. The ball is going to be in the stick of a lot of underclassmen in this game. You know, you look at Ellie Massera. I think that she is going to be called on to do a lot more than she's ever done before, especially with Kennedy gone. So I'm excited to see that matchup. And then, of course, like so selfishly over the moon, so excited to celebrate Katie Rowan's jersey retirement in the Carrier Dome. Earlier this year, it was announced that her jersey would be retired. She's the first female lacrosse player and just second female athlete, I believe, right? Because the basketball ceremony was earlier this year. To have her jersey hung in the rafters of the Carrier Dome, Gary's will be hung and retired in a ceremony earlier in the day. I'm excited to bring Dempsey up and be up there with Brian and to celebrate Katie, a teammate that honestly feels uncomfortable with people celebrating her because she'd much rather be celebrating the accomplishments of her teammates and her loved ones. And I think that that right there just kind of summarizes who she is as a person and who she was to so many of us as a teammate and a coach. You know, she was like the easiest leader to follow. I think that's kind of the biggest impact she's had on my life. I've had the opportunity to play in high school with her in youth growing up, followed her to Syracuse, couldn't imagine going anywhere else and not closing out my career with her by my side. And I'm excited to see you. It's been a while, but we're all excited.
Yeah, I can't wait to meet Dempsey.
I can't believe you haven't met her.
She is my queen.
She can't wait to play with Ken's, obviously.
I'm excited. I think it's really special to, you know, see Rowan's jersey retired. I would love to, like, I don't know if other schools do that yet, or if they are, I would love to, like, kind of have a collection of just knowing who has had their jersey retired, if any. I feel like that would be a really cool thing just to know.
It's really cool. I would love to, that should be like a magazine spread. Retired jerseys of women's lacrosse.
Yeah, it would be idea.
Anyone out there listening, hit us up on the Twitter.
Yeah. So we'll be back. I guess it'll just be us in 2 weeks covering all that happened. If you want to follow us for Twitter, for the Twitter, to see our GIFs and or GIFs, what are they? Either one. And then if you have, you know, questions or comments of what you want us to talk about, just tweet them at IL Women and we will try to cover it next time. But other than that, I think that does it for our first 2022 coverage of the season.
Awesome. Can't wait. Be back in 2 weeks. Minus Rachel, who be in Costa Rica, but
we're happy for her.
And I'll see you on Sunday.
Yeah. All right. Signing off.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.